It seems that there's some analysts in the literature that say decapitation as a tactic against terrorist groups is questionable for its effectiveness in stamping out a group. In the case of Al-Qaeda, how effective has that tactic been in getting rid of Osama bin Laden?
Well, as a general premise, I guess I would agree that simply decapitating the leader is not necessarily going to end the movement, and it hasn't, and nor did we anticipate it would. What it did mean, though, obviously the ideological icon for Al-Qaeda is gone, and that has had, I think, demonstrable impact, along with all the other leaders that we've taken out, in addition to the most glamorous one of UBL. So I think it has had impact on the movement and its ideology and its appeal.
But is the organization, what has its effect been on the organization? Is it more dangerous in the sense that it's the, you still have these franchises out there which seem to be quite effective, and maybe in some ways, I don't know, you can tell me better than I would know, that are maybe more dangerous than perhaps the original Al-Qaeda was?
Well, I wouldn't go that far. None of them are contemplating, we don't believe, an attack of the magnitude of 9/11. It has created franchises, as you point out, but for the most part, with one exception, they are essentially locally focused and not so much consumed with attacking the homeland. The one exception to that continues to be Al-Qaeda on the Arabian Peninsula, or AQAP, which of all the franchises I view as the most dangerous and the most threatening to both Europe and the United States, since they continue to evince interest in and planning for homeland plots.
Well, what was his importance at the time of his death? I know the assumption was that he was more of an inspirational rather than an aspirational leader, but I gather that from some of the things that have come out since then that judgment may have been off somewhat.
Well, I don't think so. I do think one aspect that has not been dwelled on much, at least in the open literature I've read, is the impact of his having been isolated in that compound for upwards of 6 years, and the difficulty he had in communicating freely with his subordinates. And if you go back to the early days of Al-Qaeda, the movement when he was in Afghanistan, and, you know, he used to commission or swear in new members. He proselyted personally. He engaged. And, of course, all that came to an end. And so while his value, his importance, I believe, was his iconic identification and the ideology that he represented. And so he was still issuing at least philosophical guidance, some of it operational, some of it aspirational, and frankly, in my mind, some of it delusional.
But he did apparently want to mount a big follow-up to 9/11, and it seems to be the testimonies coming out of that.
He was interested in, any number of modes of attack and places of attack that would have, I think, the two effects he was interested in were psychological and economic.
What were the lessons learned, or maybe in a better way, what preconceptions were overturned in going through the material that was discovered? What were the biggest surprises for the IC in going through this material that was recovered from bin Laden's compound? What sort of, I guess, threw, for lack of a better term, sort of threw you for a loop there?
Well, honestly, I can't point to some big, huge revelation or surprise or something that we didn't think was sort of consistent with what we had previously assessed. So I really can't point to some big surprise, other than he continued to evince interest in plotting, was, interested in the homeland. I think the other thing is, and maybe this would be at least a mild surprise, was his concern about being marginalized by Arab Spring. So that's one I could point to.
That's an interesting area. Can you elaborate on that a bit? Was he was afraid that he would be sort of pushed aside by these other movements that
were... Well, exactly, that they weren't fomented or inspired. They weren't a global jihadist sort of thing. They had other aspirations, other motivations. And so I think there was some concern, to the extent that he was aware of all this, again, given his isolation, that that would cause him and his movement to be marginalized.
But we do see jihadists regaining some ground, I suppose, in some of those areas where the Arab Spring has taken place.
Well, that is a concern. The emergence of extremists anywhere, that's certainly a concern for us in Syria, for example, yes.
Now, what was the impact on the U.S. counterterrorism efforts and across the IC? I mean, given that this was must have been a big morale booster, but it was a 10-year slog to get them. So what was the impact on your efforts? And getting back to the idea of game changer, has it caused you to shift your focus at all?
No. On the contrary, we don't think we should be in the end zone high-fiving because we took down UBL. I think it meant a sense of closure, perhaps, for the IC and, for that matter, the nation. But I wouldn't, I certainly wouldn't ascribe a celebratory aura to it.
Yeah, and so how do you assess the strength of Al-Qaeda today, both in terms of Al-Qaeda Prime, the original organization that has operated, and the franchises as well?
Al-Qaeda Core, of course, is profoundly weakened, but it's not gone. And that, I think, underscores the importance of sustaining the pressure on Al-Qaeda Corps, but it is a mere shadow of its former self simply because of the leadership, the senior leadership has been not those, the ranks below Osama bin Laden have been severely decimated. But it has given rise, as you've alluded, to these franchises, AQAP, notably AQIM, Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which is staging somewhat of a resurgence. So now the focus has got to be on these franchises. So I think, the campaign continues.
But these franchises, as you said, seem to have more local orientation. But still we have the homegrown terrorists who have tried to mount some attacks here, but we haven't had a major attack. Are we lucky or are we getting that good at intercepting plots?
Well, it's probably, I would like to think, having been a part of this in three different jobs now for the last going on 12 years, that it's because of all the things we've done, all the resource commitment, investment we've made, the improvements we've made across the intelligence community, and that means not only at the classical foreign intelligence community, but our engagement with the federal, state, local, tribal, and private sector, and our increasing engagement with many allies who are faced with the same threat. So I think there have been lots of improvements, but I'll never turn down some good luck too. And I'm sure there's been some of that.
And if you have to go back in time, if there's something you could change in terms of intercepting some of these plots and dealing with the terrorist threat, is there anything you would say, gee, I wish we'd done this thing differently? Is there anything that cuts?
Well, obviously, before 9/11, I guess there's always the benefit of 20/20 hindsight, which you always have invariably after an event like that. We could have probably been done better, I suppose, in integrating. That's one of the major reasons why the office I now occupy was established.
And how is that cooperation working? I mean, I know there was a lot of criticism about creating a DNI, but it seems that there's been some question from some of your predecessors, as well as not having the necessary authorities to really be able to call the shots over all the agencies to pull those efforts together. Do you feel you have the necessary authority to do that, or do you think you need more budgetary or operational authority?
I believe I have all the authority I need, and I've gotten, I cannot complain a bit about the, in fact, on the contrary, I'd praise the cooperation and the support I've gotten from throughout the intelligence community. This is particularly evident in these current, in this recent budget drill we've gone through, whereby for the first time in a decade we have to reduce resources. And I thought we came through this very well, and I can't say enough about the support and cooperation I've gotten from the intelligence community. So I think I've got plenty of authority, and I think, you know, that's this case where sometimes you can't legislate everything. Every functional problem doesn't necessarily need a legislative hammer.
And what about the workforce itself? Because as I recall, that after something like three-quarters or two-thirds of the workforce was hired after 9/11, both operators and analysts. Is that gap now being filled? Is the experience level getting back up, ramping back up there?
I'm not, frankly, when I served as director of NGA from 2000, I took over what then was NEMA, now NGA, and 2 days after 9/11, I was there almost 5 years. And we had, I think, something like 70% of the employees were hired during that 5 years. I never worried too much. And statistically, the experience level did drop off. It's not one of the things I laid awake at night worrying about. Whatever lack there is in experience, we made up for with brains and energy and dedication and patriotism, frankly, particularly after 9/11. So hopefully we won't recreate what we did in the 90s, the last time the intelligence community was cut in the wake of the end of the Cold War.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it very much, Mr. Director.
Okay, thank you.